Welcome to the French Chef. I'm Julia Child.
I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio. Julia Child is famous for bringing French cooking into everyday households. She's a cultural force known for her signature voice and no-nonsense way about the kitchen. But she's also known for delivering some great lines like this. I enjoy cooking with wine. Sometimes I even put it in the food I'm cooking. Today we continue our 100th birthday celebration of the innovative Julia Child with a look at how she introduced wine into American living when martinis and gin and tonics were all the rage. And who better to do that than our famous great wine contributor, Jonathan Alsop. He's the founder of the Boston Wine School. Jonathan, welcome back.
Thank you, Callie. Great to be back.
Nothing better than to talk about what would Julia drink. And she really, as much as people talk about how much impact she had on food and cooking, she really had an impact on how Americans thought about wine.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can in some ways divide the American wine experience, you know, BCE, you know, before the Child era and after, and what we have today. I mean, for a lot of people, this was the first person that they ever saw, you know, pour a glass of wine or put a glass of wine together with a dish, you know, that it was not in some kind of dismissive, you know, spoofing way. I mean, there've been a lot of spoofs on wine snobs and sommeliers and that kind of thing. She was the first person who really seemed to natural to.
She enjoyed it, and she didn't make it, as you know, we're laughing at her funny line there, but she wasn't snobby at all about it, even though French wine, you know, for a lot of people just seems like over their heads. But she wasn't that way about it.
She was not at all a wine snob. I had great honor to meet her a couple of times, and she was very egalitarian. I mean, the first time that I met her and we talked about wine, she talked about Virginia wines.
Wow.
That she had heard that, you know, exciting new things were happening and that there were going to be, you know, interesting wines from, you know, Virginia, North Carolina, Kentucky, you know, all of these tobacco, you know, corn culture states.
And that was from a woman who was really, I mean, who knew her French wine.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, in terms of the focus, you know, of course, her masterpiece, Mastering the Art of French Cooking, I mean, it's about French cooking. The focus is going to be on French wine. But if you go back to 1961 and think about food and wine culture then, it could only have been Mastering the Art of French Cooking. Italian wine, terrible reputation in the 1960s. Spanish wine, completely unheard of. German wine, you know, World War II had only been over for 15 years. You know, the only book that she could write would have been about French, I believe, would have been about French cooking and consequently about French wine.
And yet, as you say, she had an embrace of American wines as well, and in fact led a lot of people to the California rebirth of wine country.
Well, she's one of the founders. She and Robert Mondavi together founded the American Institute of Wine and Food. And I think the important thing to notice here is that it's the American Institute of Wine and Food, not the American Institute of Food and Wine.
So that tells it all.
Wine comes first in that title. And, you know, typical of the European worldview, the old world worldview, wine is food. You know, it's maybe a little bit more delightful food than other foods, but, you know, it's a food, and it's treated as food, and it's paired with other foods. And, you know, she really brought that to, at least to Americans for the first time. I mean, Cali, 1961, what we were eating in Dayton, Ohio, you do not even want to think about it. I'm serious.
Let's listen to Julia Child and Jacques Pepin talking wine and Thanksgiving turkey.
What kind of wine would we serve with this?
A lot of wine. An old kind of wine. Red, white. I like to put both on the table.
A sturdy white.
People
like a deep, beautiful Chardonnay.
That's a Chardonnay. Is that what you want?
No, I'd like a little red, I think.
A little red, okay.
What do we have
here? This is a Pinot Noir.
Good. I think that Pinot Noir
would go very well with it.
That's so just get silly. Just get it into my field of vision. I don't care.
I like it all.
I like it all.
Yeah. But she mentioned at the end Pinot Noir. That's yes. one of her favorites, as yep. you've noted.
Absolutely. Well, one of her, from Mastering the Art of French Cooking, one of her most famous recipes is beef Burgundy. And Burgundy is a place in France, and the red grape of Burgundy is Pinot Noir. And, I mean, it's central to her. I mean, that recipe is central to, in some ways, and central to her fame. And the great thing, if you look, I mean, I have the book in front of me. The great thing that makes that recipe great is that the very first ingredient is bacon. And the second ingredient is butter. And like step one of this recipe is, you know, saute bacon in butter. It's just got to get better from there.
All right, so let's talk about a couple of the favorites that you brought here.
Great. Well, I brought a couple of wines for you to taste. Mm-hmm. The one on your right there. This is a wine that in 1961 would have been unthinkable.
Oh.
This is a Chilean Pinot Noir. So when Julia Child was creating her beef Burgundy recipe, of course, you know, it calls for a bottle of Burgundy, which is, a bottle of Pinot Noir. Mm. So this is something that, you know, in 1961 was just absolutely unthinkable.
Wow. It's pretty good.
Yeah. Same grape. But grown halfway around the world.
And we should note that she, even though in that earlier clip she was talking about white, and she loved white Burgundies, which that's a Chardonnay grape.
Yes.
She loved red wine, just because of this recipe, but she was a really red wine person.
Yeah,
so,
a lot of people have this feeling that, you know, white wine's not trying hard enough. You know, that if wine could only pull itself together, it would all be red. That attitude is sort of...
So white wine is aspirational.
White wine's fun, but honestly, you know. I mean, I don't share this worldview, but there are a lot of people who, you know, when it starts to get serious, that's when we start going into the red end of the spectrum.
Now, since you were mentioning earlier about, you know, before the child era and after, during the time when she was talking about the Burgundies, the way wine was at that time in terms of its weight, in terms of its intensity, was totally different from it is now.
Yes. Well, one of the things you see, so in Mastering the Art of French Cooking, she's got a section about wine, storing it, serving it, pairing it, just some general, it's kind of a wine 101 sort of thing. And one thing you see that's really interesting and different than how we would do it today is that she hardly talks about any wine grapes. Mm. She mentions a grape called Riesling, which we've all heard of. Mm. She mentions a grape called Muscadet, which maybe we've never heard of. Otherwise, she does not talk about any wine grapes. Mm. Today, we talk about wine in terms of grapes. It's a Chardonnay. It's a Merlot. It's a Syrah. You know, that's a wine's name in some ways. In her era and in the French world, it's all about the place she's talking about.
What the French call terroir.
Terroir, or just an address. Mm-hmm. You know, Burgundy, Burgundy's a place you can find on the map. You know, when you say to someone, hey, you know, you need to get a bottle of nice Macon. You know, Macon is a town in France. You can find it on the map and put your finger, and all of the grapes that are called Macon, you know, they're right around there. You know, they're right around there. It doesn't matter so much what the grapes are. The focus is on the place. So that's one thing we see that's really different. And then the second thing, which you alluded to, is that she talks about Pinot Noir as being a heavier bodied wine, and she talks about Cabernet as being a lighter bodied wine. And this is so confusing for us modern wine lovers, because today we think of it exactly the opposite, that Pinot Noir is a light red wine and Cabernet is a strong red wine. You know, when Julia Child was writing this book, I don't understand how, but her perception, or at least the ideas about these wines, were exactly the opposite as we think about them today.
My guest is Jonathan Alsop. He's our wine contributor, and we're celebrating the 100th birthday of Julia Child, a wonderful wine lover. Mm. And we're asking the question, what would Julia drink, and how her impact was not just on food, but on wine drinking.
Yeah.
And so let's speak to that. At the time that Julia was introducing people to beef bourguignon,
yes,
and all the rest, and using wine to deglaze and whatever, how much wine were Americans drinking at that point?
Well, in terms of what a role wine had in American food culture at that time, you got to kind of go back and look at it from a calendar, you know, from a historical perspective. You know, Prohibition ends in 33, Hitler invades Poland in 39. You know, World War II ends in 45. 1950, you know, the California wine industry is just starting to get back on its feet. So when this book comes out in 1961, the California wine industry, which was decimated and was practically nothing left of, was only about 10 years old. So California wine at this time is where Kentucky wine is today.
Mm.
The development of the wines of Kentucky, the wines of North Carolina, this part of the world, 10, maybe 15 years old. You know, that's where California wine was. I mean, people didn't even refer to it as wine. They referred to it as, you know, an alcoholic beverage made from grapes. You know, didn't even really get that much respect.
Now we're talking about wine overtaking beer as the most popular beverage in America.
Well, and that's another big change, you know, between the world of wine when Mastering the Art of French Cooking came out and the world of wine today. I mean, it's so much more international. We got wines from South America, South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, Chile, you know, Uruguay, Oregon, British Columbia. I mean, these are things that at the time were just really unimaginable.
So, with all the new wines on the market, what do you think Julia would be drinking now that wouldn't have been around during her time?
You know, something I have what you're asking me is, what would a 100-year-old lady drink?
No, 100-year-old lady would have to be Julia Child.
Is that the question?
No. Yeah.
I think I'd go for something with a little low alcohol.
Tell me.
You know what? I bet Julia would be. First of all, I would love to hear her say Gruner Feltliner.
Yeah,
this Austrian grape. It would just be fun. I would pay money just to hear her say it. And I bet which is a great zippy, citrusy, bright white wine from Austria. Very new.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, very herbal.
Yeah.
Very fun. A lot of things going on at the same time, which, you know, she was like that too.
Well, one thing we do know that she always said, bon appetit. So we can know that would be something she'd be saying. Thank you so much, Jonathan Alsop.
Thank you, Callie.
Founder of the Boston Wine School and our wine contributor. We've been talking about Julia Child and how she changed the way we thought about eating and specifically drinking. Happy birthday, Julia. Thanks so much for joining us for another edition of Boston Public Radio. The conversation continues 24 hours a day on our Facebook page. We'll be back tomorrow with a new look at new research on how Americans think about money. That's tomorrow from noon to 2. I'm Callie Crossley. Boston Public Radio is a production of WGBH.